Beyond Brunel, talking about the future of infrastructure in the Southwest from the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest.
Nearly 200 years ago, Isambard Kingdom Brunel was at the forefront of an infrastructure revolution. The aim was to meet the challenges of his age. But what do we do now in a climate emergency and ever-changing world? Well, let's go beyond Brunel and discuss how we can shape the region between now and 2050. I'm Christopher Ackland, a civil engineer living and working in the Southwest, and I'll be posing key questions to infrastructure leaders and industry experts throughout this podcast series. In this episode, we'll be talking about becoming more productive, reducing waste, lost time, and drawing on new innovations. Efficiency and effectiveness are our watchwords as we explore whether we can make gains in improving the region's infrastructure, getting it right first time, and thinking differently. Today, my guests in the studio are Jane Austin, Director of Engineering and Asset Management for the Wales and Western Region at Network Rail, Andrew Page-Dove, Operational Control Director for National Highways, and joining us online, Natalie Bird, Net Zero and Carbon Management Consultant at Mott MacDonald, and Bryony Chetwood, Stakeholder Advisor and Secretary for Travel Watch Southwest. Welcome to all of my guests. Let's start with a big question. That question is, what does productivity mean to you? And I'll start off with Jane, if I may.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Well, for me, it's all about really making a big difference. It's collaborating with all of our stakeholders and all of our suppliers to ensure that we get the right solution to the problems that we're trying to fix so that we can deliver it efficiently and effectively. And we're not seen, so quite often, Network Rail, we're seen as bureaucratic, slow and cumbersome. We really want to change that, and we are changing that. And there's many things that I could give you examples of, which I'll come on into later. But that's what productivity means for me.
Fantastic. We'll save those examples. We'll come to those. But Bryony, I wonder if I could bring you in and ask the same question. So what does productivity mean to you?
For passengers and for work with stakeholders, the way we work strategies, productivity is really an outcome for us, in that productivity is an outcome, is the time that you spend on the transport network being useful, whether that is useful to third-party employers or accessing facilities, more efficiency and opportunities, more efficiency, or the time spent on the network being more productive. So that's really where productivity comes for us.
So a different view from perhaps, you know, the likes of Jane, and actually productivity put on its head almost, and it's that time saving, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about enabling.
That's fantastic. And I wonder, Natalie, what are your views on productivity?
I guess I have a slightly different perspective on productivity than maybe some of the other people on the podcast. I care primarily about getting us to net zero and reducing the carbon emissions associated with building infrastructure and maintaining infrastructure. So for me, productivity is about delivering the needs of our clients' users, so people who are using our rail network or our road network, and ensuring that those are achieved and can continue to be achieved in the future, but without seeing the significant carbon emissions that we do at the moment. So improving productivity for me would be delivering those outcomes with less impact.
And we'll come on to carbon. That's, I think, framing it nicely for my next question. But I do just want to bring in Andrew and ask, what does productivity mean to you?
Yeah, it's great to be able to listen to what other people say first, isn't it? So productivity, I think, for me, two specific things. So if I look at it from an industry perspective, from a highway perspective, then it's about how efficient and how effective we can be and how we can do things in a very smart way and collaborative way, as Jane said. But equally, you've got to turn that on its head, because what we do is provide a service. You know, we provide roads for other people to use. So actually looking at it through a customer's eyes, productivity is about doing things in short periods of time, you know, intense activities, etc., so that they can use the roads for the things that they want to use it for. So I think you've got to look at it through both lenses and think about just how we can truly not just do things for the sake of the work that needs to be done, but actually look at it from a service perspective in terms of what we can offer to the customer.
Yeah, Andrew's point there is so true. Highways, railways, that end customer is just so important. And I think we really need to focus on what are the outcomes that the end customer wants. What is it that when you get on a train or when you get in your car, what are those things that you're really looking for? And that's really important that we should all focus on that, because I think too often in the past, we haven't spent enough time thinking, what does our customer really want? Yeah. So we really do need to get that customer feedback, run the surveys, and then listen to them. And I mean that positively, really listen to the outputs that we want. And we've seen some examples of that. Look at the tremendous restoring our railway and the funding that we've got from that, and the Dartmoor line that we've restored. And we've now got 6,000 passengers travelling on that Dartmoor line. We've had the Secretary of State down, and it was such a fantastic opening. And that was because we listened, because we, through the pandemic, we felt that actually this isn't about just commuting to London anymore. This really is about our local railways and what can we do, especially in the southwest.
And so I suppose there's a broader point here on social aspects, isn't there, and well-being and that broader piece, tourism and everything else perhaps which we do need to consider as part of an infrastructure requirement for the southwest. I do wonder though, perhaps we come to Bryony, just in terms of, you know, we've spoken about transport and it's no bad thing that we speak about the railways and highways, but I suppose we should also talk about cycling infrastructure and active travel and, you know, walking. And so what's your perspective from that point?
These are all points of connectivity. So I suppose the Tarka line is an excellent example, which we're all using a lot at the moment. And I'm really pleased you brought that up, because we've seen, and you've mentioned bus, but we've seen bus services be linked into there. And those bus services then from rural areas, if we can have points where bikes can be left or where people can be dropped off in shared transport, or you know, there will be times where people will be using their single-use electrical car just because that is as economical as anything else environmentally to enable people to access the network. So you know, we've always have got that net. We have to have that net zero in the back of our mind now. We have to ask, what distance of journey is necessary? Do we need to be providing infrastructure at these node points as well? Because every node point isn't just a point for getting on, but it's also an opportunity for people to meet. So from an engineering point of view, how can we build into future-proof behavioural change? And I think COVID has enabled us to think quite differently about how we travel, how we work, and how valuable that time is to us as a working community, but also as a leisure community, when we could potentially, if the architecture is right, see a better use of resources spread through a day, which will allow a consistency of service, which we know passengers want if they're going to make the behavioural shift. Lots of ideas in one set.
And to add on that, an example of the new station that's opening this winter, hopefully at Marsh Barton. And that again improves the connectivity between Paddington and Exmouth. We've got a new bridge in there for our cyclists and our pedestrians. So again, that's inclusivity and thinking about that whole circle of transport.
Absolutely. Just to sort of add into that as well, I think it is about connecting people and places, isn't it? It's not really about rail or road or cycling, or it is about connection. We're humans after all, and maybe over the last couple of years with the COVID outbreak, actually, we maybe lost some of that interaction that we want to get back. Mohay Footbridge, another great example of infrastructure over the A38, just close to here, actually, in Plymouth. A great opportunity that was seized with an ailing structure to put it back and to give life and connection between two communities through cycling and walking. So lots of great examples of things that we're trying to do.
And so I think it's probably fair to surmise that actually, in terms of connectivity, it's not about going faster or further. It's about joining up the dots and making it easy for people to transition from one part of their journey to the next. And I think that's probably fair across all forms of infrastructure. Is that fair to say, Bryony?
I very much agree with that, because we're seeing a time where we spend a lot of time looking at our phones. So if you went back 30 years, people on transport would be seen with their heads in a newspaper. Now we are answering emails, planning holidays, chatting to friends, sending pictures of the latest sandwich we've eaten. And that sort of connectivity is enabled while we're on board. So it is not dead time where you travel. In the old days, you would bill a lower rate for travel than you do while you're sitting at a desk. Now that should all be workable time. So that connectivity means that we need to be incorporating digital connectivity at the same time as we're providing highway and railway and cycle and walking infrastructure, because it makes really good use of time. And the end-to-end points of journeys actually are often the extended part of a journey time, just as people don't think when they get in their car about the time it takes to go to a parking meter, find a space, buy a ticket, and they often don't calculate that into the cost. It is very much the same with public transport travel. If we can make those interchanges more useful, smoother, the useful journey time becomes less of a problem, really. This is the key to using all our resources more efficiently. and actually to having this sort of shared sustainable use of resource.
And in terms of resources, that's a really important point, isn't it? Linking carbon and productivity. We can't skirt around the fact that climate change is happening, and 54% of all UK greenhouse gas emissions are attributed to infrastructure construction, operation and use. And so if we're trying to be more efficient and more productive, should we be building new at all? Natalie, I wonder if you could provide an answer for this.
I think this is a real big challenge that we're going to have to really grapple with in the next couple of years. I think ultimately we don't have a very large budget ahead of us for building new infrastructure. At the moment, the opportunities we have, the materials we're using and the tools that we have, so like the plant and the construction, are very carbon intensive, and it's going to take some time before we're able to decarbonize that to the point where building new infrastructure doesn't have a significant impact. So I think we are going to have to do a lot of thinking about how we can better utilize the infrastructure that we already have to increase and meet the demands of the clients that we have and the people that we have in the Southwest. For example, through better asset management or better maintenance of our infrastructure, ensuring that it lasts longer, can we be more creative with how we use things? For example, if I look to roads, things like digital roads and smart motorways are going to enable us to increase the number of people we can put through or number of vehicles we can have on the roads without having to add more lanes or more mileage onto the network. So I think that's going to be a real challenge for us, is how can we deliver more outcomes with less new infrastructure? And you touched a little bit on resilience. I think we're also going to have to consider, we're going to have to put more effort and more emphasis on ensuring the resilience of the infrastructure that we have as well. You know, we've had some of the highest temperatures we've ever experienced in the UK in the last summer, and this sort of weather is only going to increase. We've had low drought, maybe we haven't had so much rain in the last year, but we're likely to have periods of much heavier rainfall in the future, and that's going to have impacts on our assets as well. For example, our rail network might suffer in the heat. Our infrastructure in cities like busways and road surfaces don't do well in high temperatures. And these are all sorts of things which might have knock-on implications for having to build more or replace more infrastructure. And that will have a higher impact in terms of carbon emissions in the future. So we really need to start taking a more systemic perspective, or a system-wide perspective, on how we maintain and build new infrastructure and really build climate change, both from a kind of impacts on climate change and also potentially a resilience to climate change, and take those a lot more seriously going forward.
There's so many things you just picked up on in that section there. So the resilience, you know, we saw lots of issues with the Dawlish seawall in 2014. And we know that from a resilience perspective, we've really got to join up both highways, railways, everybody with the Environment Agency to really understand the impacts of the climate change, what's happening with our water levels, etc. And that's something that's really key that we do join together. But again, we didn't just want to go and repair what was already damaged from the 2014, which obviously cut the Southwest off. We had no trains running at all. And we spent some time really considering the right solution to ensure that we came up with an innovative design that would take the waves and push them away from the seawall, which would detract them from the seawall. So I think, again, it's hugely important about thinking about that resilience and also thinking about innovation of design and thinking, OK, we can't remove concrete, we can't remove steel in lots of places. I'll come on into a moment into perhaps FRP and the advantages of FRP and our footbridges and bridges. But I think the fact is that as an industry, everyone recognises the change in carbon and the change in our environment. And we are thinking about doing the design and the innovation of structures in a different way. As you walk through, you've gone from Dawlish Marine Parade to Parsons Street. Then we've got the Dawlish to Holcombe. We were going to build another rockfall shelter. Again, we've considered that rockfall shelter. We've looked at the structure of the embankment, and we've come up again with a different design so we can reduce the length of that rockfall shelter, and we can do rock anchors, which again is a different solution. And it's not building so much infrastructure, but we are getting the solution to make the railway resilient. And many of you'll know the Parson Tunnel to Tynmouth, the area where Network Rail was considering, well, we were actually going to take away some of the beaches, which we obviously don't want to do. But at the time, we thought the only way would be to bring the railway out into the sea more and actually remove some of that beach. And we've worked really, really hard with the stakeholders and the public to really understand, and designers and engineers to understand that actually there are better solutions. And an area which I know Andrew would probably come into as well with is our bridges and different types of bridges. interviews we've done, it's not in the Southwest, I'm afraid, at the moment, but it is our first of type fibre reinforced plastic footbridge, which is fantastic. It's got all its sensors. You can have solar powered panels in there that then can generate solar power to generate power for our stations. And they're so much lighter. We don't need long possessions to put them in. There's no steel. There's no concrete. It's a fantastic way forward. So as an industry, we really do need to think about these different constructions.
Just picking up on one word that Natalie mentioned just now. So systems think, well, two words, systems thinking. I think, you know, that for me is the key in terms of thinking end to end. And we did quite a lot of work in Southwest Infrastructure Partnership over the last 18 months, 2 years, looking at net zero. And it was really quite illuminating for me from a personal perspective. You know, we looked at transport and how we could maybe move to more sustainable forms. So electric vehicles is the thing that everybody talks about. But we talk about fixing today's solutions without necessarily thinking about the consequence for later. And I think that was the thing that stuck for me in my head was, it's all very well all of these batteries being made for all of these vehicles, but how do you dispose of them? What does that look like in the future? So in anything we talk about, we're never going to get away from travel, nor should we, I don't think. That is, as I said before, that's the thing that helps us connect people, connect the country, connect jobs and all those sorts of things, and give you adventure, I guess, in terms of the things that you can do. How those things will be used in the future will be tremendously different. And I think that's the challenge, is how do we change our thinking, use the skills and capability and the knowledge that we have, some of us are a little older than others, should we say, but then harness and capture the next generation and the generation after that in terms of what is it that they want and how can we help them and enable that to happen. Lots of challenges, but really exciting.
And we've spoken about the way we approach things in the future, but I just want to bring us back to this point on being efficient and being productive and building new at all, if indeed we do. Bryony, will people just accept a make do and mend mentality, do you think? You know, will customers using transport consider that's appropriate, or have we got a bit of a fight on our hands?
I think in some places, well, in many places, there's going to be a fight on the hand, because it's going to be about creating a vision to which you're all working. It's really interesting talking about disruption and the use of resources. From a passenger point of view, one of the frustrations we come across most often in the region is, you know, when there's a closure, for example, on the West of England line at the moment, we've had closures because of land slippage due to the extreme heat, followed by now the need for waiting for rainfall. And we've got a combination of all sorts of things like farming practices, which have caused a problem. But ultimately, what we'd like to see as passengers are projects in the bag, ready to go. When you have a closure of a section of line for a period of time, we want to see the improvements that you've planned for that are part of this greater vision being put into practice, because that saves us disruption and then a loss of passengers further down the line. And it makes good use of the resources that you have designated at that single time. That must also be a cost saving as well as a resource and environmental saving, and that's a good outcome for passengers. So it is having this way of working, I think, where you've got a bundle of projects that fit into a grander scheme of things, this bigger vision, which all the time you're talking to stakeholders about, and employing some people from perhaps outside the transport industry, outside the average passenger group industry, who have a different perspective on things. Because I've heard it bandied around a lot recently that when you have a department for transport, that is where they see their solutions in transport, as opposed to maybe different ways of doing things. And highways work I found brilliantly inspiring recently, because my understanding is that the Highways of England are putting money into public transport because they see it as part of a relief for their resource. That is good thinking. So more of that sort of thing. And remembering that particularly in the Southwest, we are all living longer and we're trying to stay able-bodied for longer, which means that when you plan for different sorts of movement going forward, for different sorts of people being able to move around than perhaps we planned for before.
If I may just touch on a couple of things there, I think that you bring out. I mean, it's really important, you know, we talk about optimising use, if you like, and how we maximise use. So what we're moving to in the highway sector is trying to, rather than think as we've done in the past about single types of assets, whether it be drainage or pavement or barrier, or whatever, actually, when you have to take a possession equal to rail on the road, actually do as much as you possibly can. But we always have to bear in mind that we're going to have to send the people who normally use the roads somewhere else. So we just need to balance that bit off, I guess, in terms of how we do that. But that can help us really be far more impactful, far more efficient in terms of the way we deliver. And I think, you know, the A30 that we're upgrading at the moment down in Cornwall between Carling Cross and Chiverton Cross, I think a great example. People will see the dualling of a section of road, but it's what we leave behind. So what we can create from the old A30 by way of a sustainable link for cycling, for equestrians and all those sorts of things, but also more than £20 million worth of investment in cycling across the county, connecting Truro with places on the north coast of Cornwall. So those are things we wouldn't have thought about in the past, but it is about trying to not just singularly think about what we can do for motorists, but actually what you can do for the communities at large in terms of providing additional facilities. So,
to echo that, you know, we've just seen that on the Dartmoor line. That was 9 months. So we look at the railway as a system. So, you know, everyone sees the tracks, but it's the drainage underneath. If you don't get the drainage right, then you're going to have problems with your tracks later. So that was 11 miles of track, 21 structures, 11 crossings, fencing, earthworks, embankments. So it was a complete combination. And the point was, when we opened up that railway for operation and we ran the first train again after 49 years, it was great to see the whole railway system complete.
Beyond Brunel, talking about the future of infrastructure in the Southwest. From the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest. Search for us on LinkedIn. Follow us on Twitter at SWIP Partnership and at ICE Southwest.
And having foresight of how we use our infrastructure in the future presumably is extremely important. But I suppose in the way that we maintain and we protect those assets, you know, our infrastructure, whether it be a railway or a road or internet connectivity, whatever it might be, presumably that's also extremely important. And I suppose as engineers, often we're referring to the life cycle of an asset and the life cycle of our infrastructure. And I wonder, perhaps I could bring you in on this, Natalie, how might we consider the life cycle of our infrastructure going forward from now? So going forward to 2050, has that changed since the past? And particularly from a carbon perspective, what influence does that have on how we consider this start point, the middle ground, and then I suppose the deconstruction of those assets?
It's quite an interesting question. I think it's very rare in the UK, to be honest, that we actually get rid of infrastructure completely. We do have a kind of a tendency of building infrastructure and then maintaining it for as long as possible, which is really great from a carbon management perspective and a carbon reduction perspective. It's really good that we're not just randomly decommissioning things left, right and centre, because there are examples of that in other countries where infrastructure is a lot less expensive to put in. And so it's not really valued in the same kind of way. I think we are really good at maintaining assets that we have, but we can always do better and we can always be a bit smarter about how we do that. There's lots of emerging technologies, or maybe not even that emerging technologies anymore, that we could improve on, things like our asset management techniques and using better data and using our digital tools to collect information that enable us to be proactive about maintenance, can help to reduce the amount of hard engineering response, like interventions we need to make ultimately in the long term. So we're not waiting until things have really fallen apart before we start to maintain them, but to actively prolong the life of assets so that they can survive for a lot longer. I think we've had a few conversations around the like strategic impact of how we link our infrastructure together to help drive macro changes in the way that we use our infrastructure in the Southwest. But I think there's also a lot of focus that we can put on the more detailed side of things, like how do we deliver new infrastructure or maintain infrastructure to be more effective? I think we in the infrastructure sector can be a little bit risk averse when it comes to trying things in a different way, and that can start to stifle innovation or doing things differently. If we're very unsure about trialing new opportunities or new approaches to things, it becomes very difficult to put that evidence base together to apply more innovative approaches to building things. I'm thinking about new materials, lower carbon concrete technologies, different approaches to designing structures that could potentially reduce the emissions of building new infrastructure, but also to help maintain things. And I think there's a lot of scope there for us to be a little bit more flexible about how we develop and approach projects so that we can unlock more opportunities and more innovation and start to build things in a lower impact way.
And we'll come on to innovation shortly, because I know that's the other sort of big building block of this episode and is so important going forward. But I'm also very conscious that we've got both road and rail represented in the studio today, arguably two of our biggest infrastructure and transport providers. I just wonder, Bryony, if there's something that both of those providers could be doing better, what would that be? What would you ask of Andrew and Jane?
Come and sit in a room with stakeholders, but together. because you provide one journey for us. We don't mind whether it's rail or road, but we do need it to be as seamless as possible. And that really comes through you working together with passenger groups. So always have a passenger group on your stakeholder consultation team.
And I've ganged up on you here, both Andrew and Jane, so I'll let you respond. Perhaps, Andrew, you could go first.
It's a great challenge, and I think we do try to do those sorts of things, and we are. There's lots of great examples of how we're working together to understand and learn together about how we undertake work, but maybe we'll hold that one for a moment. But I think your point around remembering that people's journeys, certainly from my perspective, from a strategic road network perspective, they don't start or end on our network. So they use either local roads or they connect to rail or whatever it might be, and we can be better in that place. A lot of that challenge for me, though, isn't actually about the provision of the roads or the rail. It's the information that people get. It's how can we better connect and join them up? So almost back to your Wi-Fi point, you know, this, what people, I believe, what I'm hearing that they want is better information. Yes, they want reliable journeys, but they don't necessarily know which is the best way to make the journey. So I think there's a lot of opportunity that we can take. But there have already been some great examples. Again, St. Erth Railway Station, just a bit further down the road from where we are today, we put money in from the highway sector to a transport hub in order to be able to provide that connectivity. So we are already thinking out of the box and we are already doing a lot of work together. So there's lots of great examples, always more to do.
And I just like the simplicity of your answer, actually, Bryony. So yes, we probably don't turn up to stakeholder meetings together side by side. So that's a really easy takeaway for us to do. And just thinking about it here and now, it's made me think, so when we're planning possessions, the point is if we are blocking the railways in the southwest, we need to make sure, and I bet you we don't do this real simple thing, but we do need to make sure that the motorway or the highway is also not blocked, because we need to tell passengers why we're blocking the railway, and it might be for 13 days or 2 weeks or a weekend. But actually, if they then can't get a bus or a car because the road is blocked, then that just ruins the whole story and they're not able to get to their destination. And that's when our customers feel that they've been let down. So I like the simplicity. I think it's something we should absolutely be able to do straight away. And thank you, Bryony.
Fantastic. Jane, earlier you mentioned FRP. What is it and how can it help us?
Right. We love our acronyms in Network Rail. So FRP is fibre reinforced plastic. It's a composite. And basically, if you were to go out in a boat or if you were looking at cars, boat manufacturers, car manufacturers, they use it all the time. So what did we do? Well, under the innovation banner, we actually collaborated with a boat manufacturer and a car manufacturer. And we said, come on, we've got to think of a different way of building bridges. We can't keep using concrete and steel. We love concrete engineers. We love it. We love concrete. We love steel. But we have to think about our environment. So in doing that innovation, working with our suppliers, we've come up using this composite, which, as I say, it's fibre reinforced plastic. We've come up with a different design such that we can build a lightweight footbridge. So as I say, no steel, no concrete, comes in three sections. You can build it all alongside the railway and therefore you need a very, very short access. I think I mentioned the word possession earlier. What does that really mean? Well, that means closing the railway to enable us to get in and do the work. So in building it in this new composite material, it's lighter, it's easier to construct, and we can build it alongside the railway. But we do need to remember, so innovation is hugely important, but we do need to make some investment and some funding available. And we need to keep questioning ourselves, because when you do innovation, it might not work, but unless you have a go, then you're never really going to find out.
And innovation, Natalie, we use it as quite a broad term. I wonder if you could explain, what does it mean to you?
It means lots of different things for lots of different people. It's a tool we have to unlock new ways of doing things, new ways of working, new ways of delivering infrastructure. Sometimes when we talk about innovation, we accidentally find ourselves talking about digital innovation. And I think there's a lot we can do there in terms of using the data that we're collecting and digital solutions to improve the way that we deliver infrastructure projects and run our networks. But I think that there's also a lot to be said for innovation in terms of unlocking new approaches to doing things. So looking at how can we unlock decarbonizing concrete? How can we unlock decarbonizing steel manufacture? And what are the innovative approaches that we can take within our organizations, whether as designers or as asset owners, to facilitate that transition and find better opportunities and better ways of working?
Andrew, what innovations are available but haven't yet been implemented?
So if I want to be really picky, innovations that are not yet available, I guess, you know, they're things we're still thinking about, aren't they? So, you know, we're always trying to do things better. So do we really want to get into a debate about whether it's best practice, good practice, innovation? I think the point here is that we need to do things better, and the things that are driving us are different from the things that drove us in the past. So carbon, environment, they're really big issues today. So we do need to think about that and how we can adopt those sorts of things. So a couple of examples of things that we're doing. So if you look at the highway sector, the growth in electric vehicles is huge. And we're getting to a point now where actually you can't get as many of those things onto the roads unless we start to provide new infrastructure. So as part of the innovation, we have a finite amount of electricity we can generate in this country. You stick all electric vehicles across all of our network, there isn't enough power to go around. So we're doing some things with new startups, with new businesses and new entrants to try and understand how we can foster and encourage new technologies that will allow us off national grid to generate electricity so that we can provide a much more sustainable solution in terms of electric vehicles. I think if you look at other things, another driver for us in particular, and I know for the rail sector as well, is safety. So connected and autonomous plant, not having to put humans in a place which is dangerous, but actually by being able to use digital applications, using autonomous plant, which is basically plant that drives itself, you can predetermine through the design where it works and what it does. You don't have to put a human in harm's way.
And when you say plant, Andrew, you mean sort of machines and
machinery,
operations?
JCBs. Diggers, all those sorts of things. So a lot of what we would do, if we were doing earthworks today, you'd see great big machines pushing earth around to build new bits of road, etc. All of those can now be controlled within millimetres without having to put somebody in the vehicle. Well, we still do, just in case, but it comes straight from the design. And going right back to the beginning of the podcast, you know, we were talking about how we could be more productive. This is exactly how we can be more productive. We can take the human element out of it. And that's not a fear thing. We're not taking jobs away. We're actually just changing the way we do things. So to your point about how we can be more innovative, I think there's two great examples there of how we are working with others. Because I think it was a point made earlier about how limited is our thinking by our own industries, rather than maybe capturing the thoughts of others. And that's why we're trying to open up the market, encourage others to come in and challenge what we do, and also help us find solutions to that stuff.
Going on further on what Andrew's just saying there, it's not about taking jobs away. If you think, when I started work, I didn't have a mobile phone. I had a brick with a handset on the top. I expect Andrew had the same. Now I have a mobile phone. It never leaves me, comes to bed with me, because, you know, you always have to be on the end of a mobile phone. And our younger generation are different to us. We are different, and we need to think about the next generation. So I think all the stuff about data and digital, one of my absolute passions at work is, how do I make somebody's job safer? How do I take people away from the railway and give them a tool and information to enable them to do their job in a safer place, in a position of safety? So going on, we've spoken today about data. We can use drones. The amount of work that a drone can do. We've got AVA, we've got RILA, we've got hyperspectral surveys. These are all things about collecting information. They are cameras on trains, they're cameras out on the highways, that you can collect data and you can monitor that and you can turn that into information. And it means things like, we used to go out and we used to walk along the railway line and we used to have a whole team of people assessing signals. Can you see that signal? How far away is that signal? I don't need to do that anymore, because I can do it using my digital twin, using footage from cameras, and I can have everybody sat in a safe place in the office. And actually, our next generation, they're much more data savvy than we are right now. I hate to say that, but they are. And the point is, we need to think about that, because the next generation will do things differently to us. So I think that's really important consideration.
And our listeners, of course, will have heard of digital twins. But, you know, in reality, what does that actually mean? We've got a lot of data, haven't we? We've collected it. We've got information, and it's putting it together. Is that correct, Andrew?
Yeah. So let me give you an example of something that we're doing here in the Southwest, actually. So, well, bordering us in Wales, actually. So on the 27 bridges, one of the things that we're doing there is we're creating digital models. So it's effectively a model that you can replicate in three dimensions. You know, most of you will had an opportunity to maybe put some 3D goggles on and do some of that sort of thing. That's exactly what we're doing. So we bring those bridges to life you can then look at your work environment, the work you need to do in the safety of an office, but thinking that you're exactly on it. So I did this. I actually walked the cables for the M48 bridge. It did make my hands sweat and it did make me feel dizzy, but you can bring that element of reality, but to a real life environment and a real life thing that you need to do. So digital twins is just replicating a physical asset in a digital environment, but then using it to make things safer, make them more efficient. You can rehearse every bit of activity that you need to do from a maintenance or a building and construction perspective without physically having to go out into the environment.
I mean, it's just so hugely valuable. Worksite planning. I mean, can you imagine having to go out there and physically go and look at things? Whereas now, like Andrew said, you put your goggles on, you can look at it on a computer screen. And it's a fantastic advancement. Our design, that's the way we use it to do design now. So again, when you're designing something, you can turn it into a model, you can look at it 3D, you can walk through it. So therefore, again, from a stakeholder perspective, you can bring it to life. You can make people understand what it is you're putting in front of them and why you're building it.
And of course, that takes us beautifully back to the productivity piece and the fact that if we're not having to go to site, we're saving time and we're saving cost and resource and so on and so forth. Bryony, this podcast is called Beyond Brunel. What does going beyond Brunel mean to you?
The word Brunel conjures up a wonderful vision of connectivity, principally by rail. To go beyond that brings me back probably to this word journey. And that means something so different now. We're not quite at the point where we can teleport or print out the products that we need from day to day, particularly not the things that we eat. I will pick up on digital twins in a moment, but we need that connectivity. And as you know, Andrew said earlier on, I would hate to think we're going to be creating a world that we want to, as civil engineers, create a world where people don't touch and feel and see each other. In fact, for the southwest of England, it has never been more important that we make the most of this leisure time, the ability for people to take extended weekends or weekday holidays while they remain connected. So Beyond Brunel is providing that connection, which enables the productivity and the innovation which Brunel meant. But it's Beyond Brunel is a plus five. It's Brunel plus five, you know, plus five other things. It's Brunel plus the end of the journey, plus the virtual part of the journey, plus the dream of the future.
And that point about change is so important, isn't it? Because we are changing so fast. I wonder, can our infrastructure keep up? We're planning now for the next 28 years to 2050, but actually, because things are evolving so quickly, how do we incorporate that change into our thinking, Natalie?
We've seen an incredible amount of change even in just my lifetime, which is a small 27 years. And I think I can really see how the types of needs we have for our infrastructure has really changed just since I've been alive. So I think when I spend a lot of my time thinking about how do we get to net zero by 2050, that's the time frame I spend my life thinking about. It's quite hard for us to really imagine what we'll need by then and what kind of infrastructure demands will have. I think we in the past have been quite slow, and it's a lot of building on the same stuff over and over again, very much like doing the same types of work and the same types of approaches. And that's very much business as usual, is kind of delivering the sorts of solutions that we've delivered in the past. But I think that we collectively need to change our approach, both at an investment level. So how do we decide what sort of things we're going to build? How are we going to respond to these needs of our users? But also at a shorter scale level of how do we go about designing and implementing and developing projects. So I think there's a lot of scope for innovation in terms of just as engineers and as designers to try and do things differently to the way we've done them before.
I think very simply, we've just got to be really bold. Look at what's happened in the last 2 years, and now we've got a new prime minister, we've got a new king. There's even less money than we've ever known. Everything's going up. Affordability is key. I think we've got to be so bold. We've got to have ambition. And we really need to all work together. It's no good saying it, but we do need to join up. We need the contractors, the suppliers. We need to understand what our stakeholders want. And everybody from the DfT across needs to join up. We need to simplify because we love making things so complicated. So let's be bold. Let's have ambition. Let's simplify and let's really make a difference as we move forward, because we haven't got a lot of time. So it is about balancing the risk and thinking about our planet.
And I agree. Can I just throw one quick thing in here? Because I'm going to put a challenge out there as part of this podcast. All right. So we got a challenge earlier about how we can work better together across rail and road. Fabulous. And I think, you know, as clients, we have a role and a responsibility to really drive change and be demanding of our suppliers and of the contractors in terms of the work they do and how they do it. But equally, and this is my challenge actually out there to industry, is don't do things in an insular way. Do things together, because we will develop solutions far more quickly. Take the British cycling analogy. As everybody goes 1 second faster, the whole team goes 10 seconds faster. So that's what we need to do. We spend so much time defending our own sort of little industry of development that we want to do, that we're actually inhibiting our progress. So that'd be my challenge out there to the supply chain and to all of the industries out there that help in everything we do in the sort of connecting people and transport arena, is how can you work together in order to be able to propel us forward faster, more effectively, more efficiently, and really get that future design that we want?
So let's have one team.
That's brilliant. Thanks to all of my guests today, Jane Austin, Natalie Bird, Bryony Chetwood, and Andrew Page-Dove. You can find out more information about the Beyond Brunel podcast series online, including related research projects, at southwestinfrastructurepartnership.co.uk.
You've been listening to Beyond Brunel from the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest. Search for us on LinkedIn, follow us on Twitter at SWIP Partnership and at ICE Southwest. Beyond Brunel is presented by Christopher Ackland, a Fresh Air Studios production.